Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on the broadcast today. Is environmentalism deadly to life? Is it deadly to life, freedom, and the gospel of Jesus Christ? Well, that's the title of a brand new article, an op-ed piece that appeared out on ChristianPost.com just yesterday. I think it was posted out there. And it says this in the headline of Environmentalism, Deadly to Life, Freedom, and Gospel of Jesus Christ. The article or the op-ed was penned by Dr. James Wanless. Dr. Wanless has been on the program with me before, but he's a professor of physics at Presbyterian College in Clinton, South Carolina. He is also a senior fellow and contributing writer for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, and he's the author of the book Resisting the Green Dragon, Dominion, Not Death. And so there, even in the title of that book, you see again the idea or the concept of death being introduced there. His article here, his op-ed piece here, talks about the idea of environmentalism being deadly as well. I thought it would be good to have him on the program then today to talk about this op-ed and this idea of what makes environmentalism deadly. Dr. Wanless, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Hi, Kevin. It's good to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you. Hey, before we start, your daughter just recently won an award. I think it was in the Bible Bee program. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that before we start our conversation?
Sure. Thank you, Kevin. There's something called the National Bible Bee, and I'm happy to be able to tell people about that. It's kind of like the National Spelling Bee or the Geography Bee or something like that, but instead of studying the etymology of words and things like that, you actually study the Bible. So there are thousands, maybe tens of thousands of kids across the U.S. who engage in this, and they have a local competition in South Carolina and each state, and they do this around the country then. And then from that local competition, they invite the top 100, the people who scored the top 100 or so, get invited to participate in the nationals, which is the finals, which was in San Antonio, Texas, in November. So if they get given a number of verses to memorize, and it was in John, I think 1-6, that they had to memorize for the locals. Not all those verses, but a huge number of those verses. I can't remember, maybe 100 or 150 of those, and then they get tested on their ability to recite, and then tested on their knowledge of the geography and history and cross references and Greek and Hebrew and all kinds of things. And then in the nationals, they have another test, and those who qualify, who are invited to the nationals, get a huge pile of other verses. So I think for my daughter, she had on the order of about 800 verses that she had to memorize in her age group. She was in the 11 to 14 age group, juniors. And so she spent many, many months. That they got told those verses, I think, in August, and they had till November to study. So she spent, you know, a couple of more than that months studying many hours every day, going into the history and geography and even the politics of ancient Israel and trying to understand everything, and in addition to that, memorizing all those verses. And then at the nationals, they do the test. The top 15 who get through an oral elimination round and the test go through to something called the semifinals, and they put the kids on a stage in front of several thousand people, and just like you would see in the Geography Bee, they're reciting verses.
Yes.
If they make one mistake, add an S, they're out. they get to the next round, the top five get to the next round, and they do the same thing, and then they start adding Bible knowledge questions and so on. And she came first in the nation for her written test, and she came second overall. So
wow, congratulations. What's her name?
Grace.
Well, fitting. Fitting. Well, praise the Lord. Congratulations, Grace. Job well done. Wow, I think that would rival some seminary programs, I think. And here you were saying that, just a little bit of irony, you said, I can't remember how many verses she had to memorize. She had to memorize not just how many there were, but the actual verses themselves. So I'm more in your category. Like, how many verses are we talking about? So.
Well, you know, I had a dream, Kevin, of maybe trying to memorize with her, but after the first week, it was, you know, I memorized 40 verses today, Dad. How are you?
Yeah.
My younger daughter did it too, and she did well, but Grace got to the final. So.
Oh, that's great. You know, the point I'm at is I can still remember when I could remember, so I'm there. And I like to tell people I have a photographic memory. It's just that I'm out of film right now, so nothing seems to stick very long. Well, let me ask you about this article that you wrote. You used in the very beginning, you set the point that you wanted to make up by a question that you like to ask your students in your earth science class. You ask them the question, what is the final frontier? Explain to our listening audience, you know, how you then use that concept about the way that they're thinking these days, these students, and then how you segued from that into talking about the issue of climate change, as it's called now, or global warming, as it was before.
Sure. Well, we're living in really interesting times, and I guess really the 20th century has been interesting for a number of reasons. Mm. Well, the 60s was certainly one of the most interesting and crazy times, but it was also the time when the whole space program really got off the ground, and that was when, I think it was President Eisenhower said, you know, we're going to get the Apollo program going. And just at the same time, TV was becoming a big deal in people's lives, much more than ever before in the U.S. And 1966 was when Star Trek started. And you know how everybody knows how it begins. It's been made politically correct now, but it used to say, even when I was a kid, I remember they would say to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Yes.
And that's just a straight out quote from a federal government booklet, which was produced after the Sputnik, the Russians had put the Sputnik satellite out there.
Mm.
So space was very much on people's minds in the 60s. In 1969, the Apollo astronauts actually walked on the moon, and the irony is to boldly go, that's the starting words of the Star Trek show. So they were clearly trying to tap into the excitement that was in the culture.
Mm-hmm.
But a month before the astronauts set foot on the moon, Star Trek was canceled.
Mm.
So it's interesting. And I was wondering about that as I was thinking about that. And it sort of tells you something about the 60s. Even though we think of the 60s as crazy times, by and large, the vast majority of American culture at the time was far more interested in reality than fantasy.
Mm.
Far more interested. And so, you know, you would think that Star Trek would not be canceled. It's today, though, that, you know, we're the Star Trek generation, in a sense. Everybody knows to boldly go, I guess, where it says where no one now has gone before,
because
that's politically correct. And canceled in 1969. Nowadays, Star Trek is not canceled. It's a phenomenon.
Mm. Right?
You have a huge convention in, I think it's going to be Las Vegas this year, and they are probably going to have tens of thousands, maybe 50,000, maybe more people showing up for that.
Mm.
So there's a change that's occurred in the culture. There's a real turn where the majority of the culture today prefers fantasy, prefers the world to be different than the way the world really is, and to actually live in some kind of fantasy world is preferable to living and dealing with the realities of day-to-day life. And so that's how I set that up. And then I said, well, you know, we look at that, it's we see that not just in in movies and things like that, how that dominates social life. But we see that elsewhere. We see it in my area of science. Mm. We see this fantasy world where we hear that global warming is now accelerating and it's getting worse. That's what we hear, and yet you see the real data from satellites, which is the best data that we have, saying that there's been no global warming for 20 years. And so, you know, what's going on where people prefer fantasy mm-hmm. rather than fact? What's the problem?
You cite in your article there, too, a book called The Flight from Reality in the Human Sciences. Mm-hmm. So that's another subject. I mean, you're alluding to it, but you're just saying that there is this propensity, this tendency now among humans, you know, to desire to escape from reality. And this escape really has some pretty significant consequences, because there is then a willingness in an attitude like this to adopt things that just don't match with reality, like the environmentalism.
Yeah. I count you a brother, Kevin. I'm a Christian
Amen.
As well, and I'm also a physicist, and so I deal with hard data every day, and one of the things as Christians we try to teach our kids is to tell the truth. We believe that there is such a thing as truth, that it's real, that it can be something that we can grasp and seek after. And I alluded to that book just because, you know, I'm a college professor as well, and we see this so much increasingly in colleges where so many professors have adopted a view of the world which is that there is no truth. It's all about power. It's all about who's in charge and who's going to get people to do what they want. But it's not about truth or facts. We saw this, you know, in politics. Remember President mm-hmm. Clinton, I think in the 90s, he said it depends on what the meaning of is.
Mm.
Let's just redefine things. You want a man to be a woman? That's okay. I mean, just depends on how you define things. And that's not really honest, because we know that that's not the case. The world that God has made makes us deal with hard facts. And it's true whether or not you choose to jump off a building, we have to deal with the hard reality of gravity. But it's equally true in society.
Mm-hmm.
We have rules that God has given us. The Ten Commandments are a great blessing to show us how to live. It's not a curse or a limitation, but it shows us the kind of rules which help for harmony and peace and justice in society. And if we reject that in favor of fantasy, we're choosing a world which is not real, and therefore people are going to suffer.
Mm. You know, you mentioned you went back to President Clinton there to make your point. I remember in the Truth Project, they had this portion in the Truth Project talking about the subject of truth and why it matters. Like you said, we tell our children, we teach in the scriptures, obviously from the scriptures, that truth is a vitally important, and that and so forth. But they were given this case in the Truth Project where a book had been written, and the book told about some sort of revolution or a person who was downtrodden in Central America, I think it was, and then from that extrapolated out, you know, how that all these policies and attitudes that we should have towards governments and different things. So it extrapolated it out into a big point that was being made. Well, there was one of the reporters that had read that book and had, you know, commented on it and so forth, happened to be in the area that the book was cited, that all this took place. He started asking questions of the locals, and he found out, they said, no, nothing like that has ever happened here. So he found out, he ended up inadvertently exposing the fact that the entire book was based upon a lie. And when he confronted the author of the book and those that had, you know, promoted the book so heavily about the error, they admitted that, yes, it was. Those things never did happen. But they said that it was not important, because the point that they were trying to make from those fictitious events that they had, you know, fabricated in the book, that that the point was a bigger issue and more important than truth itself, whether mm-hmm. those events actually happened. And even a little bit closer to home, I don't know if you remember, but even in the President Obama's book, you might remember that he said he had these conversations with his girlfriend at the time, and that, you know, that she had these bad attitudes about blacks and so forth. And then it came out later on that he had actually, the girlfriend never existed. Somebody, again, had done some research and went to find out, you know, what she was doing now and these types of things. And so he had to admit afterwards that, no, it was just a compilations of a number of girlfriends that he had had. But in the book, it's presented that he actually has real conversations with her, and that she's a racist and all this. So they said, well, that didn't matter. All that mattered was the truth that he was trying to speak about afterwards, the point he was trying to make. That seems to be the type of thing that's happening here with global warming, too. Would you agree?
I think increasingly that's happening, and it's disturbing because in the hard sciences, people have to deal with reality because airplanes have to fly and bridges have to stand and so on. So generally speaking, people in the hard sciences have tended to hold fast to the idea that there is truth out there and that we can have access to it through experimentation and through reasoning and such. And so what's happening instead is that people are beginning to, we've got a whole generation of scientists who are being raised on models, computer models. And so when they say that the global warming is accelerating and they show you the graph going up, they're not showing you real data. They're actually showing you what the model is saying should be happening. And then you go and put the real data on it as well. I've written about this before. You can see that. The real data is flatlined since 1998, even though we're having El Niño right now, which is a well-understood oceanic effect causing warming generally around the planet for a few years. It's still, we've had essentially no warming for over 20 years. So you look at that compared to the models, they say, well, we prefer the models. That's essentially what they're saying. We prefer what the models are saying. But you can say, well, no, it doesn't really matter what the models are saying because the reality is saying something else. And they say, well, la, 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 I can't hear you. I prefer the model. That's what's happening. It's.
And your article, though, says, though, that it's deadly. You make this claim, and we just have I'm up against a hard break. I only have a couple minutes left. But let me just say this. It says, around the world, environmentalism has become unbalanced. A radical movement that has metastasized social pathology unhinged from reality. It's deadly. Deadly to human prosperity, deadly to human life, deadly to human freedom, and deadly to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Is that hyperbole? Is that true?
I think those are very strong words, and I wrote them and I stand by them. But it has truth in it, absolutely. President Obama was in Ghana recently, and he's telling the Ghanaians who have abundant coal and gas and oil, he says to them, don't use your coal, don't use your gas, don't use your oil. These people are desperately needing access to energy. They're impoverished relatively. And he says, don't use all of that. Instead, use windmills and use solar power. That is an unrealistic view of the world, which will result in Ghanaians being impoverished. Other examples would be corn. You know, we've got to burn corn, 40% of the U.S. corn crop, so that we can save the planet. That raises the price around the world of this global commodity, and people actually in poorer countries have to make hard decisions. Some people will die because of that. So those are just a couple of examples, and I could give you many others, of where having this world view, being so committed to this ideology of environmentalism, results in genuine pain, even death, for other people, mostly in the poorest countries. We don't feel very much. It's the poor people who suffer the most.
Dr. Wanless, thank you so much for writing this op-ed there in the Christian Post article. I'm going to give folks the title of that again and also tell them about your book. But thank you so much for taking time out of your teaching schedule today on your break to be able to call in to talk about this important issue.
You're welcome. Thanks, Kevin.
Okay. Again, that was Dr. James Wanless. He is a professor of physics at Presbyterian College in Clinton, South Carolina. He's also a senior fellow and a contributing writer for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. He's the author of the book entitled Resisting the Green Dragon, Dominion Not Death. Highly recommend that you get a copy of that book and read what he has written about. He obviously there in the book develops much more than we had time to do on the program today about how these types of environmental, radically infused environmental policies will lead, in some cases, even to death. And so he points that out in the book and does an excellent job. He's got a lot of research in that book. He knows what he's talking about. The article that we've been referring to was an article that was called Environmentalism's Deadly to Life. It's Deadly to Freedom and the Gospel of Jesus Christ. You can check that out on ChristianPost.com. It was posted yesterday. That's www.christianpost.com. Has a really interesting picture on the cover, too. Has a associated with the article, has a fella in a polar bear costume, and then he's holding up a sign that says this: climate change is unbearable. Climate change is unbearable. Check the article out for yourself.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.